All right, back to normal. Here we go. We got hockey games, basketball games, major golf tournaments. We've got the Jays, who I just know are going to get it together tonight. I feel really good about the Blue Jays tonight. You have to. Oh. You have to.
I have never seen a game where I thought it was like some kind of exhibition where a younger or worse league was visiting New York to play. Do you know what I mean? Like, it was.
Yeah, it was tough.
It was with Gerrit Cole on the mound against our boy Roark, who I don't know what he's supposed to bring to the table if he's dialed in, but he ain't cutting it right now. And I think he offered up. They were saying on the broadcast he was offering, like, hey, I'll hang around for a couple more. No, thanks.
Yeah, I thought that was a little bit of a reach, the idea that Roark was saying, hey, I can continue to get crushed for
no,
you,
the
Charlie.
Backup like catcher hit three bombs off you.
Yeah, it was batting practice last night, and he was throwing pitching machine stuff. Like, it was the last one that got him was at LeMahieu, I think, maybe, that hit it opposite field. I can't remember who hit the home run off him. And it was just middle in, like 90 on the gun. Anybody in baseball is going to connect on that. The way the Yankees are hitting right now, it's just gross. I mean, you almost have to be perfect to avoid them. And this has been a rude awakening for the Blue Jays.
Did I read this right, though? Is it 13 home runs in two games?
They have lost by 25 runs in two games.
They've given up 33 runs. I know that, but I thought I read that the Yankees have 13 home runs.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that is that's a monster number.
Oh, and then you throw Cole on the mound. It's insult to injury.
Yeah, like, it didn't matter. It really didn't matter. If they put three or four on the board last night, the Yankees, you knew that he was going to close down shop, and the Blue Jays just didn't have it. And I spent the majority of the day yesterday saying I thought it was a pivotal moment, and it was a failed opportunity. It doesn't mean that the Blue Jays are not still going to make the playoffs. I still believe that they will, but it was a bit of a reality check. It's been a reality check for two games that the Yankees are just clearly, they're a lot better. They're a lot better. Tampa's a lot better. The Dodgers are a lot better. I think there's a chance the White Sox are a lot better. I think Minnesota might be a lot better. Again, the Blue Jays, they're a middle ground team, and that's fine. And I think they're going to make the playoffs, and that is a great achievement for them. But the past two nights, to lose by 25 runs in two games is just astonishingly bad. I mean, that is absolutely demolished over two games.
And you might feel a little bit better if it was a three-game set and you don't see them for the rest of the regular season. But they've got tonight, correct me if I'm wrong.
They got tonight and four more after that, I believe.
That's where I was like, stop this. Please make this stop.
Yeah, they're going to face Gerrit Cole at least one more time.
Well, I don't think it matters who they face, quite frankly, because the pitching that they supply is just not going to be good enough. Like, unless you have Ryu out there who's going to give you really quality stuff, you know, they're running into it. Like, Tanner Roark is a real gas can right now. You got Chase Anderson on the mound tonight. Like, the prop bets, I'd say, what, 3.5 innings? You think he gets to four tonight? I don't know if he does.
Yeah.
Like, I can't guarantee you the starting pitcher for the Jays tonight will get into the fourth inning.
I think they might be happy with four.
I think they might. You might, if that proposition was on the table for Charlie Montoya, would you take four strong from Chase Anderson tonight? I think he might sign off. He might. But the bullpen is on fumes. The bullpen has held up really well all season long. But at some point, it's going to burn you. And that Yankee roster, I mean, Judge struck out, what, three times last night?
Yeah.
Like, he's not in form, and Stanton wasn't even in the lineup. And they got production. And LeMahieu is probably their most dangerous player, and that's saying something. When you have a lineup with Aaron Judge and Giancarlo Stanton and Gary Sanchez when he's hot, DJ LeMahieu is unbelievable. So, you know, it was tough.
Yeah.
It was a tough 24 hours, give or take, for the Blue Jays in New York.
Well, I mean, and then you wake up this morning, and our buddy, I almost thought the glute grab was coming on 17 and 18.
I'm worried that Tiger threw away his tournament on two holes. Yeah. I think he probably threw away his tournament. He's even par on the 17th tee, and he bogeys 17. He chunks a chip on 18 that you just don't see from a lot of great players. I know it's a tough course, and Sir Nick Faldo actually made a pretty good point.
No.
What he the hell is that point. All about? Like, what? The, like
just, he's been knighted. He's been knighted.
I know he's been knighted, but so is Sean Connery, I believe. Like, I think there's some actors and some athletes that have been knighted.
Let me just put this on the table. If we had a board meeting before our first show of the year, and you said to me and Noodles, guys, I just left England, and I was knighted by the Queen. I would like to be called Sir Brian Hayes. I would punch you as hard as I possibly could right between the eyes.
I kind of like it. I don't know why. I would call him Sir Brian.
Well, no one would ever ask you to call them Sir. I mean,
I think that he has a little thing where he...
I don't think so. I think
why,
though,
you not, somebody called him that? I missed that. I missed that.
Like, Mike Tirico! Mike Tirico said, you know, our second group's coming up. I forget who we named, the announcer, and then he said Sir Nick Faldo. I was like, Mike Tirico's calling him Sir Nick Faldo?
I think it's like a nickname. It's like calling someone the coach or someone, Lucky or whatever it is. He has been knighted.
I have inside information that at the beginning of every broadcast, he would like to be – he has it where it's like
– Come on, stop.
I want
but it's not up there on the Chiron. It doesn't say Sir Nick Faldo when he comes into the booth. And they do a –
You listen to your boy Jimmy Nance.
He's the maestro. He's the maestro.
Jimmy Nance, every broadcast. When he first introduces Nick Faldo, he says Sir Nick Faldo.
Yeah, I understand that. I get it.
I'm just saying I think it's a little long. I don't care if the Queen knighted the guy. I don't think that he should be called Sir. Like, I'm sorry, he's a golfer, man. He's not a knight.
I think it's a little bit rich. I'm with you on that. It's not our culture. It's not our history.
What
happens over in the UK, it's like you always see that with the Open Championship. I call it the British Open, and some guy streaming online from Sheffield will write me and say, actually, it's the Open Championship. Like, no, it's not. Over here, it's the British Open. Like, the Open Championship for me is the Canadian Open. That's the Open Championship that matters to me. That is my national championship, so that's the one that it's going to get when I call it the Open Championship. But I think being called Sir or being knighted – in a way, it's almost so arrogant, but you're not the one that created it. So it's like a nickname that has been bestowed upon you that is so offside in terms of arrogance, yet you can't claim responsibility. I didn't tell the Queen to knight me. That would be his answer, I'm sure, from Nick Faldo.
But where are you guys on this? Because I see this all the time. Like, there's people that are, you always say, respect your elders, but at what point do you think they're your peer? And I'll give you an example. I sat at a wedding with Larry Tannenbaum, and people were calling him Mr. Tannenbaum. I'm like, hey, Larry.
Yeah, it's Larry.
Why?
Yeah, it's Larry.
But I see people all around because he has, you know, he's an owner of the Leafs, and he's a bigwig, and he's a multi-billionaire, I'm sure. It's Mr. Tannenbaum. Well, to me, it's Larry.
I guess if you work for someone, though, I mean, that might be a little bit different. If it's someone that works for them, maybe the players, you know, that's what they call them. They have a ton of respect for them. And it's one of those things like, hey, if, you know, Wendell calls him Mr. Tannenbaum, then Nick Robertson's going to call him Mr. Tannenbaum. You know what I mean? Like, if that's what it is.
I get that. But I what point? I guess that's my question. It's not a disrespect. At what point do you feel like you can call another person by their name? Lou Lamoriello walks in the room. Do you go, hi, Lou, or do you go, hi, Mr. Lamoriello?
It's Lou. Of course it is.
Lou.
It's Lou.
I've heard people call him, hi,
I
Mr. Lamoriello.
Listen, I'll tell you one where I have been guilty of this in the past, and afterwards I thought to myself, what the hell am I doing? And it happens a lot in radio, and here I am. I'm getting all preachy, and I'm gonna call out the industry here, and I'll be the first to admit it. I've done it. Is when you have a commissioner on the line and you call Mr. Commissioner. Like, well, oh, thank you, Mr.
Fair.
Commissioner. No, but it's
that,
not fair.
He's
it's not.
That
it's
right.
Gary. No, he hasn't earned that right.
Jerry.
It's Gary, Jerry, Roger, it's Rob. Yes, okay, it is. It's Adam. It's not Mr. Though. Commissioner. He's not the king. He's not the king.
I know, but you introduce him. Here he is, the commissioner.
The commissioner.
Roger Goodell. You don't
the
say.
The commissioner, not Mr. Commissioner. Listen, Mr. Commissioner, I thank you so much for joining us. Oh, it's just such a great delight to have you on the show. Mr. Commissioner. I think Mr. Prime Minister, Mr. President, you know, I think I'd be willing to do. Maybe Mr. Mayor, although we've had John Tory on a bunch of times. We just call him John.
Yeah, you know? But I think he accepts that. Like, he doesn't hang up and go, and those guys should have called me Mr.
No,
Mayor.
No, I don't think so. No.
I just think that there is a line. So listening to Sir Nick, he should put a stop to that and be like, guys, knock it off here. I'm Nick.
It all comes down to one thing and one thing only. How bad do you want to ass kiss? If you're some pigeon that wants to kiss ass, everybody's Mr. Everybody's Sir Nick Faldo. If you're a straight up dude and a playa, everybody's a straight name.
Yeah, okay. Getting back to your question about Eldrick.
Yes, the ass grab.
Because why is he allowed to be called Tiger? Shouldn't that be the same thing? Isn't his name Eldrick? Why are we calling him Tiger?
Dude, he's got one of the coolest nicknames in the history of the universe.
It is one of the coolest nicknames ever. Yeah.
It is, but Sir's pretty cool, too. You wouldn't mind being called Sir from time
Sir
to time.
Sir Brian Hayes.
I think so.
He's got a nice
take
ring.
That. Yeah.
You do have a bit of an English hairstyle today. Is that something?
I've noticed it. It looks like I've moosed it up.
That's a little bit.
You look like Michael Caine now all of a sudden.
I know. You look like Stephen Caldwell. I love it. Brilliant.
Yes.
You're right.
Brilliant. Brilliant.
It's Scottish. If it's Caldwell, it's Scottish.
For sure.
And it does have a little bit of a Glasgow shine on it, doesn't it? I like it. You fire one of these off, a headbutt in someone's face. That's what this looks like.
Drop
the
Irish right to the ground.
Shake. I love it.
Yeah. So, Tiger, he doubles 18. He bogeyed 17. He ends up 3 over on the tournament. And we'll catch up with Bob Weeks on that in about 20 minutes.
He was cooking early. Like, I think he got it to 3 under. He made 3 or 4 birdies in a row. And I'm like, you know, somebody in our company was loving that action, and then he just pissed it away in 2 holes.
Yeah, you know where it went wrong for him? He had birdied 3 in a row, and he lipped out a 4th birdie in a row that he thought he had. He was doing the walk-up, and it lipped out on
him,
and he was rattled.
One thing I want to ask Bobby, and I don't understand it in the last 5 or 10 years watching these guys, the desire to pull out the driver, when you see them hitting 3 woods, 330 down the middle with a 3-wood, and accurate as can be. Mm-hmm. It's just like, is that not good? I don't care if it's a 700-yard par 5. If you can hit it 330 down the middle with a 3-wood, why aren't you hitting it?
Exactly.
Like, exactly. Phil right now is slashing it around that track like you've never seen before, and he just keeps hitting it. It's just like, what are you doing?
Well, Tiger's first birdie of the day, he hit a stinger, like a 2 or 3 iron stinger, about 280, 290.
Dude, Brian, we played with an amateur the other day, and what was he doing with that 2-iron that he was hitting?
Yeah,
he was
exclusively hitting it, though. Every
270, and he's a club champ at a club.
Yeah, in Toronto, exactly. Like, it was, you would think they'd get to him, but the thing is, you see other guys on tour that are hitting at 330, 340, and it becomes an ego play. And you feel like you've got to get that extra yardage, and you always think, I'm confident, I'll find a way to get on the fairway. And listen, Tiger, I thought, played pretty well. I saw the majority of his round, and he's not going to be happy with 3 over. He easily could have been better than that. But we'll get to that in about 15. Masai Ujiri spoke today, and he had some interesting things to say that I think have people in Toronto feeling, I don't know, a little bit uneasy.
I would say uneasy.
A little bit uneasy.
Like that. No extension talk or anything. Yeah, I'll deal with that. That is code word for, like, I'm going to see how this shakes out. That's what I got out of that.
Well, I have a theory on this, okay? And you guys tell me if I'm crazy. So,
okay.
Masai Ujiri earlier today was asked about his own contractual situation. He's got 1 year left on his deal. And he said, we have not even opened up discussions. You know, himself and MLSC, they have not started to seriously discuss anything on a contract for him. And then he followed it up by saying, also, I'm not doing this publicly anyway. You know, I'm not going to negotiate through the media. But I think what he has done here, and I think this would be a perfect move, it is the epitome of leadership, is he is using his own leverage which he has more leverage than any other executive I can think of in my lifetime here in the city of Toronto. He's using his leverage to get a great deal for Nick Nurse. Bobby Webster will be done next, and then he'll step up. So he's fighting for his guys, and he's going to get every penny out of them. And Nurse got paid, and I'll bet you Bobby Webster is next, and then Masai will sit down. And I think that is a brilliant move, because I'll bet you Nurse...
What if Masai doesn't even do those deals? What if just MLSE handle those deals?
You don't think Masai Ujiri is involved in a Nick Nurse contract?
I know, but maybe they went to him and said, we haven't even dealt with yours. We'll handle Bobby Webster and Nick Nurse.
Like, I didn't get that impression listening to him today.
I'm just saying.
I don't think it is. It sounded like to me Masai was clearly involved, like he should be. He's the president of the club. I mean, right? Like Sheldon Keefe doesn't get a deal without Brendan Shanahan involved. Like, obviously, Masai Ujiri is the point man. And this is only my read on it, but I wouldn't be surprised if he is using his own leverage to get his guys deals that they deserve anyway. Nick Nurse deserves a great deal. But maybe you pop in an extra million on top. Maybe you get a little bit more for Bobby Webster. You get a little bit more of a title for Bobby Webster. And Masai doing that, I think, would go a long way in the trenches. And if he is using that methodology, he's making MLSE sweat. He's making Raptors fans sweat. Because everyone's dying for him to sink, you know, to lock in on a deal.
I'm not understanding the element of, like, what do you think Nick Nurse and Bobby Webster are going to do? Go up to Jerry Tannenbaum and say, come on, man. Like, get this guy done. Look what he's done for us. I don't understand why that's such an important thing to him or how it could help him.
Here, let me explain it. What I'm saying is, I think the optics, I think the gesture, the leadership of MLSE coming to Masai, who I would think they've gone to first. I don't know that, but I would have to believe they have gone to Masai and said, Masai, let's talk. And if he comes back and goes, no, we're working out Nick and Bobby first, and then we'll get to me. I think that goes a long way.
I agree with you, Brian, but I think there might be a different motive, just to see what those guys are getting paid and then go, oh, by the way, you know, I know what you gave that guy and I know what you gave that guy because I helped with that process. So times that by two or, add on this and that. Like, to me, I think there's many plays at hand here when you're in business. I thought you were heading down the path that let Nick get done, let Bobby get done. I'm the king daddy topper anyway, last because I want the rest of the money.
No, I'm not talking about it from a selfish standpoint. I'm saying what I think it is it's the ultimate captain move. It's the ultimate Sir Masai Ujiri move to say, I'm not worried about me. We'll figure out me. I want you to worry about my guys. Get Nick done. Get Bobby done. And then we talk about me. Because it may not seem like a massive gesture, but if I'm Nick Nurse, man, I got a ton of appreciation for that. Like, Masai could easily say, I don't want anything else happening in this organization until I'm figured out. And guess what would happen? He would be figured out. Nothing else would happen until you got the Masai Ujiri contract done. But for him to say, I'm taking a step back. My guys deserve the time. My guys deserve the energy. My guys deserve the money and the attention, I think would symbolize just incredible leadership on top of what he's already done.
When it does come to his deal, I don't think it would be very complicated. He's brought a championship team to this city. He could be a factor in recruiting Antetokounmpo. Mm-hmm. It's almost like, what do you want to write on that piece of paper? His deal shouldn't be that complicated.
Christy Pitts. But you know what else? You can take time and also see where things are headed. Like, I still believe, you know, we had that Jerry's, was that yesterday or 2 days ago, where, is he here 5 years from now? I don't know. I really feel like he's destined for, somewhere else, and that's not a slight on him. You know how I couldn't define it. Bigger and better things, just other things.
Just a new path, something different.
I feel like Masai Ujiri is going to be, he's going to have a championship. He's going to be here for a long time, build the culture here, which he's done a great job. But I also feel there's another play in his life. I get that sense. And that's really from Joe Pigeon here on the outside, just looking in. I just sense that he has other things in mind eventually.
I would not be surprised at that either. I mean, the only thing I would be surprised at is if he took an NBA gig out of nowhere in a smaller market. You know, it'd be one thing if it was a massive market that was calling his name.
Right.
Some new title that is, you know, even bigger than just basketball operations.
Right.
Maybe something political. You know, that's the kind of area that he's been in anyway. I mean, he's worn multiple hats for quite some time, Masai Ujiri, in terms of what he's done with the club, but also in terms of, you know, social justice and different initiatives that he's been involved in and different, I guess, campaigns, so to speak. So yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if at some point he's got something else on his mind.
Yeah, I don't.
Or somewhere
sense
else
that he
wants to take it.
I don't.
And maybe
sense
that
he
happens.
To Cleveland.
Maybe
you know
that
what I mean?
Exactly. He's not going to Cleveland or Milwaukee or something like that. But maybe that happens, and maybe he walks at the end of next year. And if he does, what I am confident in is that MLSC is not going to shortchange Masai Ujiri. You're not going to have a Barry Trotz, Washington Capitals situation. Where they only want to give him 3 years and he wants five, so he walks. He's going to get what he wants. They're going to work out a deal. I think he's got the utmost respect for all the characters involved, all the big figures involved, Tannenbaum, Bell, Rogers, et cetera. And he should, right? Because they've given him a lot as well, right? Like, it is a two-way street. They've offered him up a lot and a great opportunity, and I think he's respectful of that. I'm sure he is. So we'll see what happens with Masai in the future. But Bob Weeks coming up in 10 minutes. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. All right, Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 on the TSN app, your home smart speaker, and up on TSN 2. Brian Hayes, the O-Dog, Jeff O'Neill, Jamie Noodles McLennan. We've got Bob Weeks calling in here in just a moment. Ray will join us just after 5. We've got Game 6 tonight. Islanders looking to survive against Tampa, and Braden Point, a game-time decision. Are you actually buying that?
No, he's playing.
You think so?
I don't think he is playing. I thought the opposite way.
Yeah, I think the other way. I think Coop's being coy. I think he's like, yeah, we'll see, you know, game-time decision. I don't think we'll see
it. You get to this point only a certain amount of times where it's like you just tell yourself you got to play. I don't know. I know there's you got to take care of your health and blah, 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 but – how often do you get to this situation? You got the Dallas Stars sitting there. Not that they're not a good team, but you can go to the Stanley Cup Finals. I would bet any money that he plays.
Ooh.
Do oh, I yeah. have?
My ears are burning.
I was just going to say that Sir Brian Hayes is. Yeah.
I'll bet you $100 he plays. Take it or leave it.
You take that action. You've got two brown ones burning a hole in your pocket
I
there.
Know.
Oh, he gave 50 back because he's a chop.
Yeah, I went Tiger down the stretch yesterday, so I lost.
By the way,
money.
Noodles, the guy that we played with yesterday, Donnie, he texted us today. He said, funny, I have the same yardage. My ball's in the same place from yesterday, and it's 161 yards.
Wow.
I said, yeah, well, use your own. Gun.
Yeah, that one's on me. Gun, I put more thought into it last night. That one's on me. I should have used my own gun. I should have known better. But, you know, I'll get back at it at some point. But, yeah, I just don't think Point's going to play. I just don't. And I hope he does, you know, clearly for entertainment purposes because he's such a great player. And I want to see Tampa move on just because I find them more interesting and more entertaining. But if Point doesn't go tonight, they are in tough. Like, they are in tough, and I will say this. Tampa does not want to go to 7 against a team like New York. Like, the way the Islanders play, they will muck it up and grind it out and win 1-0 in quadruple overtime game 7. Block 48 shots a period.
How about your buddy Leo Komarov out there? He's got
with the cage.
The cage on and the giant beard and just grizzled. Like,
He loves punching people in the head. He is total shift.
I remember
shift disturber.
Okay, is it fine for me to say this now? Because when he was a Leaf, I said it, and oh my God, did I take backlash? I'm like, is he a gray area player?
Yeah, he is. He's always been the definition of a gray area player.
I know, but boy, did I take heat when he played. Remember, he made the All-Star team. Scored 28 goals here.
Well, that
I was
because,
like, he's a third-line winger. And boy, did people kick me in the nuts for that, too. I was like, that guy's a third-line winger.
That was,
and he's a gray area player.
That was a technicality, though, to be fair to Leo Komarov. And that was the tank year where every team had to have an all-star. So
right.
He went, and he did have a very good start. Remember, he had like 15 goals in the first 35 games or something like that. But, yeah, he's a gray area player. But I will say this. He has mapped out a pretty good career considering the
fantastic
toolbox. Right?
Fantastic.
Like, he doesn't do anything great. I don't even think he does anything very well outside of being an agitator and a guy that gets in there. But he finishes every check. He's positionally strong. He kills penalties. He agitates. He'll chip in a little bit offensively. And that's a pretty good career for a guy that doesn't scream, you know, 12, 13-year career or whatever he's going to end up having.
Yeah, he grinds.
He really grinds. He grinds. So we'll get into that more with Ray in about 35 minutes. Again, game six tonight. Some news behind the bench, too, with the Maple Leafs that we'll touch on. Manny Malhotra taking over as an assistant coach on the bench for Sheldon Keefe. So what does that mean for Bruce Boudreaux and his future and Sheldon Keefe and his staff, et cetera? We'll get to that a little bit later on. But the U.S. Open is off and running. We had some history today. Justin Thomas, 5-under. That is a new first-round record at the U.S. Open. The first time anyone has shot 5-under in a U.S. Open in the first round. So he was right there because Patrick Reed was 4-under. Rory was 3-under. Some big names sitting atop the leaderboard. Some Canadian content as well. Here is our TSN golf analyst, Bob Weeks. Thomas, basically a perfect round. Like, I watched the majority of it, Bob. He looked unbelievable tee to green today.
Just really managed his game well. You know, he took advantage of the easy holes, which you have to do. Birdie, I think four of his six birdies that he made were on, like, the 13th, 16th, 17th, and 18th easiest holes. And that sounds very obvious, but a lot of guys, if you don't take advantage of those, because there's not many scoring holes out here, let's face it. But if you can take advantage of those, that's great. Hit a bunch of fairways, hit a bunch of greens, and kept the damage to a minimal. Just one bogey on the card. So really nice round.
Bobby, would the USGA ever react to one individual performance, or does it have to be more of a grouping that dummies the golf course? Because I'm sure they're looking at 5-under and they're saying, okay, pretty funny. That's not going to happen again on this track.
Yeah. You know, they're going to look, they'll look at the overall scoring average. And listen, there's a ton of guys under par. I'm looking at it right now. 24 guys right now. Now, half of these guys are not all the way done yet. But there's a lot of guys in red figures. And there's a lot of theories to the fact that, you know, they're playing this in November, so they don't have the daylight that they have in June. So they wanted to get these guys through. So they eased up on the difficulty for the first two rounds, perhaps, until they get to the weekend when they can manage that. But I talked to a couple of guys after the round, Corey Connors, and he was sort of saying that it was scoreable out there. There was no wind. The greens were actually fairly soft in comparison to what the U.S. Open is really like with those tarmacs that they put out there. So, you know, I think they'll probably look at these numbers and get tighter as the weekend comes to us.
Zach Johnson just hit the craziest putt I've ever seen in my life. I'm sure you saw it right before you came on here, Bob, but I can't believe what I'm watching. I'm seeing this tweeted out right now. He shot it 15 feet, 20 feet past the hole, and it rolled back down, and he cupped it with the pin in, and he was on the green.
Yeah.
Like, what the hell was that?
That's Wingfoot, baby. I'll tell you,
these greens
are bizarre, and some of them are, you know, that you can look at the wacky putt, and if someone hasn't seen it, I don't know how you describe it, but, you know, as you said, it went down over one hill, around the corner, past the hole, and took a slope and came back to it. On the same token, Corey Connors missed a 7.5-inch putt today that he said had a foot of break. It's ridiculous, some of these greens out here, and people always talk about the U.S. Open with the long rough as the major penalty here, but you can hit the center of the green on 18 holes here and walk off over par very easily.
Bobby, do you think Tiger Woods, I think Hayes was mentioning earlier, Brian, you said bogey double, right?
He finished bogey double for 3 over.
Does he just carry that right into tomorrow and it starts with a double and then it's the interest level goes? Or I agree with your take saying he's not going to make the cut. I just don't see him on form. He hasn't played enough, and I just see that carrying right into tomorrow.
It could very easily. Tiger's usually pretty good about leaving that behind, but I will say that the finish, so in the scrum after his round, he got asked 6 questions, and 4 of them in his answer included the words, "I can't believe how poorly I finished today." So he's obviously sticking in his craw. And the, you know, the bogey, double bogey finish, but he was 4 over his last 6 holes. And he had it right there for the first, you know, 14 holes or so. and just kind of stumbled in, which you can do here, but boy, it just stings when you do that. If you go double bogey, bogey on your first two holes, it's a lot easier to take it than what he did.
Yeah, I'm concerned he threw his tournament away on 17 and 18. I thought he played well. I really do. He had probably a handful of drives that landed on the fairway and kind of jumped into the deep rough by a foot. You know, like he wasn't spraying it. He wasn't wild off the tee. He just missed his spot by 5 or 10 yards. And if you do that at Wingfoot, you're in trouble. But I thought he played pretty well. I do. I think he plays like that again. He shoots 69. And I think he'll be fine.
I mean, there's a low one in there. There definitely is. And in addition to those drives, as you said, he missed four drives. And I would say the grand total into the rough was maybe a foot and a half if you added up all the distance he was from the fairway. The other thing that we haven't seen for a while from Tiger is the putter actually responding. I mean, he had three putts, I think over 16 feet that went in today, which is something we haven't seen for a while. And on these greens, as we were just talking about, that's a lot. I thought, as you said, I think he played pretty well. Unforced error on his last hole when he kind of chunked a chip. So there's a couple of things to clean up, but overall, I'd say he played a lot better than the score indicates.
With Bob Weeks, our TSN golf analyst. So Corey Connors is one over through 18. Hadwin and Hughes, two over. Both of them, you know, all three of them in contention. They all play together. Of those three, who do you think has the best shot of some separation on the weekend and maybe contending?
If Corey Connors gets a few more putts to drop, he's got the perfect style of game to play a U.S. Open. I mean, he is, I think, right now tied for 20th in the year of last year, the PGA Tour, tied for 20th in fairways and regulation and tied for 6th in greens and regulation. So he hits a ton of fairways and a ton of greens, which you have to do out here, obviously. So he's got the makeup for it. I think he's getting a little bit of maturity when it comes to playing in the big lights now, which he didn't have before. He kind of tended to get a little bit nervous in those. But I still think Mackenzie Hughes is probably playing the best of the three of them coming in here. He did not have a good day today. He had a couple of doubles on the card, and I think he was frustrated by it. But I would say Mackenzie Hughes is probably the guy I will pick tomorrow to be the low out of those three guys.
All right, enjoy, Bob. We'll do it again soon. Thank you for this.
Take care, guys.
Bob Weeks, our TSN golf analyst, and the Golf Insider is brought to you by your Ontario Subaru dealers. Fall back into adventure at your local Ontario Subaru dealer. Find your award-winning Subaru well-equipped for all seasons and enjoy rates from as low as 0.5%. Dustin Johnson slashing it around, too. He's two over through 11.
There was a graphic on screen this morning where they were showing the rough at 4 inches.
Mm-hmm.
Like it looked longer than 4 inches. I'll tell you that. Like the rough was gritty, and guys were just finding it. Like I can't imagine playing out of that, and you know, not being frustrated.
Oh,
like
it's unbelievably frustrating for these guys to realize, and it's almost on the caddy to get to them and say, "You just
sandwich.
Have to chip out." Yeah, you have to. Like, don't try, because you're staring at it. You're like, "I can get it there. I'm 195 out. I can get it there." And it's like, "No, yeah. You can't." Like, you're not. So wedge it out,
yeah,
pull out a wedge again, get it close, try to par, and move on with your round.
It was
it's tough,
I mean,
man.
Yeah, you could tell. Like, guys were – like, it was deep. Like, and guys were finding it, too.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah. Oh, it's fun to watch at the U.S. Open. I love it. So we'll see. You know, we'll see. And you got to check out that Zach Johnson putt. It is absurd how he –
There
it's
was a
mini,
putt like that in the morning, too. Like, all the guys started with Kevin Na first thing in the morning. They had to go up and then try to make it coming back. It was just – it's a little bit goofy for me. I know they want a tough test of golf, but I find those greens to be – they're outrageous, man. There's
yeah,
one
gets
that
the
looks
mini
like
putt.
A roller coaster.
Yeah, it's kind of a mini putt type vibe a little bit, but it's challenging. And again, Justin Thomas shot 5 under. Patrick Reed 4 under. Like they took advantage of the course. So it's not like it's impossible. You just got to play almost perfect. And if you do it, you can score. Mm-hmm. So we'll keep track of everyone else that's out there down at Wingfoot in the U.S. Open. Race coming up in about 25 minutes. The Jays back in action tonight. My boy Baker Mayfield, a big platform for him tonight. We'll tee that game up. Browns, Bengals. We got to have a pick as well. I got to think it's my pick. You've had the last two at least.
Go ahead.
I'm on the clock.
Bring in the wrestling music.
We'll hear from Al's brother a little bit later. We'll see what he picks, and then I'll make a decision based on that information.
Yep.
And it will be tremendous information. There will be a new man behind the bench with a familiar name here in Toronto and throughout the NHL world. Sheldon Keefe and company making a hiring today. We'll tell you about that. We'll get into it. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. All right, so the Jays in action tonight, and Teoscar Hernandez will return to the lineup, which is a lot quicker than I thought it would be. I thought he was going to be out for an extended period of time, and he's back, and he's hit cleanup tonight. Biggio will lead off into Bichette, Grichuk, Hernandez. Vladdy hits fifth. He will DH tonight. And Julian Merriweather is going to start now. I would assume that's just an opener. I'm guessing they're hoping he can give them two or three innings, and they'll move on from there. But, you know, you're gonna try to avoid a sweep at Yankee Stadium because the last two nights have been ugly, and we'll get to that a little bit later this afternoon. Rays coming up in about 20 minutes. So Manny Malhotra has been on the staff in Vancouver for the past little while, and he had a good career, right? Like he was a good player. And he's a Toronto guy, and he grew up playing when it was the MTHL.
Now Guelph the Storm guy.
Guelph Storm guy, yep. And Sheldon Keefe and company, I guess, signed him up and welcomed him to their staff today. And he's the same age as Sheldon, so they would have played against each other, maybe with each other, when they were kids growing up in Toronto and against each other in the OHL. And now he's on the staff. And I don't know enough about him as a coach, but I know he was a well-revered player, very well-revered player. And my understanding is he's been doing pretty good work in Vancouver.
Yeah.
But it's another young guy. You know, that's the one thing that does stick out to me is we talked to Peter Laviolette yesterday, and he said he was looking for the opposite. You know, he's an older guy. He wanted a young guy on his staff. And Sheldon Keefe, we thought, was at least looking into maybe acquiring a guy like Bruce Boudreau, who would be an elder statesman, been around for a long time. And he decided not to do that. He went with a guy his own age.
Ultimately, this guy's going to be in charge of one of the special teams, either the penalty kill or the power play.
Yeah.
I mean,
Manny was a good...
Was his contract over in Vancouver? Obviously, it had to have...
I read that he had a year left, but they asked for permission. They asked for permission, and Vancouver gave it. I just read that before we came on air, is that he was given... They gave the Leafs permission to talk to him, and they didn't want to stand in somebody in the way of somebody advancing their career. You know, I don't know what that meant, because he's an assistant to Travis Green. He's going to be an assistant, or is he an associate to Sheldon Keefe? I think he's an assistant,
right?
Correct?
They might. I'm sure they're paying him more money. He wanted to be in Toronto. He's
exactly
from Toronto.
Toronto guy, and who knows? But they weren't going to stand in his way. That's basically what they said. And you know what? It's a testament to Travis Green and his staff there, because they did a good job. And Manny does have a very good reputation. So I think it's a nice hire. I saw online when people are like, what about Boudreau? What about Boudreau? I feel like Boudreau would have been, for me anyways, just on the outside, a distraction. Because if they struggle, everyone's going to go, okay, Boudreau's got to take over now. Like, don't you sense that you hire a guy like Bruce Boudreau? He's not an assistant. He's a head coach. So basically, you hire the guy who's going to slide left when the head coach gets fired. That's
yeah, I think that alignment definitely would have been there, and people would have been connecting those dots. I don't disagree, but I do think it's been a trend like that in the NHL. Like, a lot of different staffs have been hiring
head coaches,
lifelong head coaches.
Yeah,
you know, it's just kind of the way it goes now. There's only 31 jobs. If you don't want one, or you don't have one, and you want to stay in the league, you got to take a gig as an associate or an assistant coach. And I think the only counter to that would be, you know, does he want to be challenged? Does he want guys who are just going to be seeing the game the same way? I don't know. We'll find out. Like, I don't know how Manny approaches it compared to anybody else. But I think Sheldon Keefe feels secure and should feel secure as long as Kyle Dubas is still here. Right? As long as he wins and Dubas is still here, the two of them are connected to the hip. They've made that clear.
No kidding. You know how that deal goes. As soon as a new GM comes in, it's like, I got to get my own guy. And that's his guy. They're guys.
They're connected, and they have been for a long time, and they believe in each other. You know, and I like that. I like that cohesion. I would prefer that over, you don't want two guys that can't stand each other or don't see the game the same way. Dubas is building a team, and he has been building a team, I think, the past 2 years, that he envisions Sheldon Keefe coaching, and it took a while
for
him to get there.
I like what you just said there, Brian. There's a belief there. It's not like they're just saying, oh, man, God, I hope that – they believe what they're trying to accomplish here is ultimately going to win. And we're going to find out, and we'll see. And it's our job to critique it and watch it and follow every game. But they believe – I like that.
Well, they got conviction. And, you know, the thing is – you can have that conviction. You got to back it up, though, eventually. Like, you don't have to back it up yesterday, but you do have to back it up. And at what point? Like, this isn't, you know, this is the wheelhouse of some of these players, and this isn't the most patient market in the world, put it that way. So, you know, every move is going to be scrutinized times two, times ten. So, you know, that's up to Kyle. That's up to Sheldon to fight through that. But they're going to have to deliver eventually, or they're not going to be here. That's just the nature of this business.
Yeah, that's the business. Exactly.
Yeah,
they're well aware of that.
Yeah, exactly.
But, yeah, I think why Sheldon Keefe should feel confident, again, for a number of different reasons, is I almost look at it as like Dubas is a screenwriter or a script writer. And he's writing it with some actor or actress in mind for the part. And I think he had been doing that with Sheldon Keefe behind a bench. You know, he had been thinking about how he wants to build the team because his past history was in Sault Ste. Marie with Sheldon Keefe, with the Marlies with Sheldon Keefe, and now it just continues with the Maple Leafs. And there was some other Leaf news yesterday that Kyle Clifford and I believe his agent came out and said, you know, we're hitting the market. And it sounds like the Leafs have moved on, or whichever party decided to move on, and that's fine. I feel like maybe that decision was made based on the condition on the pick, because they gave up a third-round pick in that deal, and if they re-sign Clifford, it becomes a second-round pick, which I think is a legitimate question. Is Kyle Clifford worth a round in the draft? I don't know if he is, if he's going to play on the fourth line for 8 or 9 minutes.
Maybe not. Yeah, probably not.
You're right, but here's the other thing. What's the price point for him? They're counting every penny.
Mm-hmm. I know. Kyle Clifford probably wants $2 million a year.
Well, I was just going to say, he probably wants 2.5. So are you going to have your left winger on the fourth line make 2.5 where you might not be able to, you know, you've got to squeeze every dollar out?
I think agents aren't going to want to hear this, but those hardworking guys with a cup experience, I think they're going to get squeezed, and they're not going to be making that 2.5.
Well, you're right, but here's the other thing. Copycat league, look at what Tampa's got going. You better make sure you got some of those players to when you go deep into the playoffs and it gets into the
back alleys. Yeah, but there are guys that make that money. They can score you a bit. You know,
you're right.
They're more offensive. Like, they're Sorellis. They're guys like that.
All I'm saying is that if Tampa Bay wins the Stanley Cup, the closest thing, like, Kyle should be watching that roster construction and say, what we want.
That's not even close because do you think that Tavares and Marner and Matthews, they don't even fit into what Tampa's done there? Do you know why?
Well, financially, but
it's not even the same apples and oranges because it's already from the start not even close to being the same.
What I'm saying, though, is what you're doing is Kyle Clifford is one of the only players that plays a certain way. You may have to find a Kyle Clifford just that makes $900,000, not one or two.
Well,
that's the only thing I'm saying.
That's where that draft pick, the condition going from third to second, it may make sense.
Yep.
If Clifford's still sitting there a month into free agency and they say, we can give you $1 million, and he's like, I have to take it. It's either $1 million or a PTO.
Right.
I think he'll get signed. I think there will be a market, but the Leafs are not the only team dealing with a cap crunch.
No, not at all.
Or dealing with a salary ceiling laid down from the ownership group because of COVID. It doesn't even matter what your cap is. We're not spending. So I think at $2 million, no chance because you just can't do it anyway. And then on top of it, you're like, we're not giving a second rounder as opposed to a third rounder when we need draft picks and they need to build up this depth chart, you know, beneath the surface because – I would say that they need more of a, build up of talent.
Yeah, the cupboards.
Their,
like cupboards are a little
system.
Bare because of the guys are up now, so they recycle.
Exactly. So they need picks, and that's why I think they went out there and acquired it with Kapanen, and they need more. And going from a third to a second doesn't make a ton of sense when you need that. But if it's at $900,000, or a million. I mean, it's not like you don't like Kyle Clifford and he couldn't fit. But right. we'll pick this up with Ray.
Yeah,
we'll get back
into
it with Ray in about 10 minutes. Rowan Barrett coming up later this afternoon as well. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on the TSN app.